I am admittedly new to the concept. Lorelei smiled fondly. But I have had an excellent teacher, and what I have learned from him would seem to apply. Chapter 19. Redemption.
I'm gonna lose my fucking job.
Huh, you and me both, Rachel agreed.
You will not lose your job, Alex, Lorelei said. For all anyone at your office knows, you are still recovering from being shot last week. It's entirely understandable.
The three sat on a simple bench in the courtyard of St. Mark's Cathedral, with Rachel in the middle. Each of the others held one of the angel's hands. Rachel was back to wearing her simple white dress. Alex turned to look at Lorelei, who passively watched her surroundings through sleek sunglasses. She wore her stylish skirt suit once again.
I thought you didn't want me to have a job anyway,
Alex asked in a joking tone.
Doesn't it get in the way of my constantly getting laid?
A quiet smile spread under Lorelei's sunglasses. I have seen your office and your desires, Alex.
It's like a law firm on a television show, so many lovely ladies. I would hate to take you away from such a playground before you've had a chance to truly enjoy it. Okay, stop. We seriously need to dial this back. No more girlfriends, no more flings. I've got more than enough of that in my life with you two. And things are still kind of up in the air with Onyx and Molly, apparently. And it's not like Taylor's... Ugh, I'm good, you know?
Can I just point out one thing in all this? Rachel asked. One thing, then I'll let it all go.
Sure,
Alex said, glad to have an ally in his struggle for self-control.
Absolutely, speak up. This totally involves you too.
Rachel turned to him and said,
You got into this whole mess because of your conscience.
She smirked.
Thinking with your cock hasn't gotten you into trouble once yet.
Alex's jaw dropped. Lorelei allowed a sly grin.
Thank you, love, she murmured.
Silence held between the three of them. Eventually, Alex realized that the two women were watching something, though he saw only an unoccupied church. Rachel's expression slowly turned grave. Lorelei maintained her poker face.
What is it?
Alex asked.
Are they here?
They have been here for some time, Lorelei answered. We are only now being approached.
Alex, said Rachel, close your eyes for a second.
Huh?
Please, just a second.
He complied. When he opened them again, he saw a woman's hand pull away from his face. She was tall and blonde, dressed much like Rachel, but seemed a good 20 years older. Like Rachel, she was beautiful. Also like Rachel, the woman had large, white wings that grew from her back. Boundless kindness shone in her eyes.
Hello, Alex,
the angel said with a soft smile. He caught an odd note of familiarity in her voice.
Do you know me?
She tilted her head to one side a bit.
I did, once, a long time ago, though you did not know me. I am Hannah.
She paused.
I am sure you have been told how little we angels can explain to a mortal, but I will say that it is very nice to finally speak with you.
Hannah's gaze turned to Rachel. Alex recognized the sincere, obvious respect Rachel held for the other angel, but also saw her nervousness.
Is it time? Rachel asked.
We have been ready for a short while.
Hannah nodded.
We were uncertain whether or not you simply meant to speak with Alex and Lorelei here before coming inside. After a while, the waiting became a bit awkward.
Rachel shrugged. I'm ready.
May we accompany her?
Lorelei asked.
We considered that this might be your intent,
Hannah explained.
It is highly unusual for an angel to show herself to a mortal this way.
But Alex has seen so much already. Yet to bring him inside for such a congress might perhaps be too much. And as you have already no doubt sensed, the cathedral is not exactly welcoming to one such as yourself. Though be assured that no angel here will do you harm, Lorelei. You have more than proven yourself to be an exception among your kind.
Alex bristled at that, but Lorelei merely tilted her head in something of a bow.
I am honored,
the succubus said.
Rachel shouldn't have to face this alone,
said Alex.
She will not be harmed, and the matter will be resolved swiftly.
Hannah assured him,
this is neither a trial nor an inquest. There is no need for a lengthy and dramatic debate. Those who sit in judgment are ready to announce their decisions as soon as Rachel enters.
She doesn't even get to say anything in her own defense?
Alex blinked.
They already know everything,
Rachel shrugged.
I did what I did.
Indeed, Hannah agreed.
There is not much to discuss, merely for Rachel to face the judgment of her actions by her peers and superiors.
All the more reason for those who love her to stand beside her, Lorelei said. Hannah blinked. She did not lose her composure, but the statement clearly caught her attention. She looked from one face before her to the next.
You love her, Lorelei?
I do.
Lorelei replied,
just as I love Alex.
Again, Hannah looked to each of them thoughtfully.
For Alex, this would merely be inappropriate. For you, this could be acutely painful. Are you sure?
It is less than what Rachel and Alex both faced on my behalf last night.
Nor is her situation as grave as yours was. Again, I expect the cathedral will prove to be a place of great pain for you.
I will endure.
You don't have to do this, Lorelei, Rachel whispered.
I do.
The angel looked to Alex. Tell her not to go in there, please.
I can't do that.
Alex shook his head.
You can totally do that. She gets hot when you boss her around. She'll obey you.
He shook his head.
It's not like that. We're in this together.
Rachel looked pleadingly at each of them again, then back up at Hannah with a helpless expression. The older angel nodded.
Very well, Hannah said. Please come with me.
You can't seriously think you won't catch shit for this, Rachel warned.
I'll attribute it to your terrible influence,
Hannah replied. She led the three to the cathedral.
Alex, what happens here will likely seem disjointed and confusing. You lack a great deal of context. Much of what you see will not stay in your memory long. This is natural. Don't be alarmed when your recollection of this day becomes cloudy.
Alex frowned a bit.
Awesome, I'm confused already.
That's the spirit, Rachel snorted.
She squeezed his hand before letting go. As they came close to the cathedral's doors, Alex saw hazy shapes fade into his vision. The closer he got, the more they looked like people, until finally he realized he stood among angels. He saw every ethnicity and a range of ages, from young adults like Rachel to those who looked much older than Hannah. The only unifying factors were that they were all healthy, vibrant, dressed all in white, and seemed rather surprised as Alex, Lorelei, and Rachel approached. Some even looked a bit awed. Hannah faded right through the doorway. Rachel half frowned and half smirked as she opened the door for her companions. As she came to the steps of the cathedral, Lorelei took in a sharp, audible breath. Alex took her hand. Rachel reached out to do so as well, but Lorelei waved it off.
I will be fine,
Lorelei said in a strained, quiet voice.
We are with you.
The angel frowned. She didn't like it, but she continued on a few steps ahead. As much as she wanted to reach out to Lorelei, neither woman wanted there to be any ambiguity, as to who held whose hand for support in front of the other angels. Rachel glanced at Alex, who nodded and stuck close to Lorelei. Then she turned and moved into the cathedral. As Alex followed, he felt Lorelei tremble and tense. She walked with much the same stiffness as she had the night before. He saw no boils upon her, no burns on her skin as Rob Gorge had suffered, but she clearly endured significant pain. They passed through the foyer. Alex saw that it was full of angels, most of them talking amongst themselves until Rachel walked through. Conversation ceased as she passed. When Alex and Lorelei followed, however, there were open gasps of disbelief. The main chamber of the cathedral took Alex's breath away. As he followed Rachel inside, he found the entire space awash in the bright white light of several hundred angels. There were so many of them on the floor that dozens more hovered above in the space offered by the vaulted ceiling. Part of him wanted to run away and hide. Part of him felt small and insignificant. Part of him wanted to sink to his knees and beg forgiveness for every misdeed in this life, and anything he could remember from the scattered pieces of his former lives. The part of him that would not let down Rachel or Lorelei kept him walking. As in the lobby, conversations hushed in a ripple of silence with Rachel's entrance. Angels in the aisle parted for her. Rachel walked slowly toward the altar, where half a dozen angels stood like some sort of committee. They all looked up at her gravely. Then they saw the mortal and the demon at his side.
"Blasphemy!"
shouted one of them. Vincent's face twisted in rage. He immediately drew his sword. It was larger than Rachel's, burning with greater intensity. An orb of light glowed brightly in the pommel.
"That wretched thing does not belong here."
"She comes in peace," Hannah replied, as Vincent strode forward. "And in love. She is also under my protection here. You will not harm her, Vincent. Put away your sword."
"You go too far, Hannah,"
Vincent growled.
"Hello, Vincent,"
Lorelei said coolly. It cut off the retort that Rachel was about to throw out. She turned to the succubus with eyes wide. Alex felt a bit surprised, too, but he didn't exactly know why this seemed any stranger than anything else that was happening.
"You know him?" Rachel blinked. "Yes, not in a biblical sense,"
Lorelei added with a small grin, made all the more enigmatic by her sunglasses.
"But we have met."
She looked calmly at Vincent, whose face remained gripped with anger. "I am unsurprised he never mentioned this to anyone. His advances were rather oafish." Vincent shook with even greater indignation and rage.
"One more word from your foul mouth in this space and I will— Stop this!"
shouted Lawrence. He stood at the altar, looking on with disapproval.
"Hannah," he said calmly, "why have you brought us to the sight of this mortal? Why have you brought this demon among us?"
Hannah did not answer until Vincent lowered his blade. She walked with him to the altar. Rachel followed, standing before the steps. Alex and Lorelei followed Rachel in turn, but stopped between the first pews. Once she stood among the rest of the Council of Angels, Hannah answered Lawrence's question.
"You might ask them that yourself, Lawrence."
The bald angel's eyes narrowed. He looked to the pair standing in the aisle and asked,
"Why have you come?"
"We love her,"
Alex answered. Once more, he heard assorted gasps and murmurs of disbelief.
"She's apparently in trouble with you guys. We wanted to be here for her."
"Your love for Rachel and for the succubus is as plain as day to us, Alexander,"
Lawrence replied.
"It is also much of the reason why Rachel stands here today. You should not know Rachel at all, but that was beyond her control. To be loved is not a crime. Your feelings toward her are not an issue. Yet her feelings for you are inappropriate to a guardian angel, and her actions in following those emotions are a transgression of the practices of heaven.
Alex frowned.
I'm told I'm gonna have to take your word for that.
You will,
Lawrence replied flatly. Alex paused. He was, after all, standing in a cathedral packed with angels.
Okay,
he gulped.
To hear this claim of love from a succubus, though, is curious.
It may be curious, but it is true, Lorelei said. Our time together has been limited, yet I find myself falling in love with Rachel as I have with Alex.
Rachel's chest rose and sank with a heavy breath. She kept her silence.
What would you know of love?
Vincent scowled.
As much as anyone might through observation and self-education,
Lorelei answered, more for the assembly than for Vincent.
I have gone through the motions of love many times in my past. I have worn it as a mask. I have used it as a weapon. Yet in recent days I have come to find love in my heart for Alex, and for Rachel. He has taught me so much, and would never have had the chance but for Rachel's decisions as his guardian.
Demons lie,
Vincent sneered.
Not on holy ground, they do not,
Hannah noted.
Not this one.
Lawrence and the other angels looked at Lorelei for a long, silent moment. Finally, he turned to his fellows at the altar. There was nothing said, merely nods, from all except Vincent, who seemed somehow left out.
Let us dispense with the matter of the prisoner first,
Lawrence said. Alex sighed. He would have rather had them move on with Rachel's issue first instead of dragging things out. She looked to him and Lorelei, seeming a bit sad, then back down at her feet. Another aisle cleared. Murmurs and grumbles filled the air as two angels brought Lydia toward the altar. Each of them held one of her arms. She walked without being dragged or pushed. Lydia wore the same tattered dress as from the night before, but this time she did nothing to conceal her demonic features. Her tail whipped about irritably, much like that of a cat ready to lash out in anger. As she walked, she frequently winced and grunted in pain.
Lydia, servant of Baal,
Vincent called out,
you have entered my dominion and plied your trade as is your kind's purpose. Yet you turned your activities toward a mortal who walked under the protection of heaven's light. You brought him torment and intended his death. You also plotted the furtherance of darkness and evil in my dominion.
Lydia growled and spat black bile at the altar. As the blob sailed through the air, Vincent whipped out his sword and flashed it in an arc to block her spittle, causing it to burn away with a hiss before it landed.
A lesser demon than you was recently destroyed when brought to holy ground against his will,
Vincent continued coldly.
But that was brought about by mortal hands. You are here by the will of the hosts.
He strode down from the altar to stand in front of Lydia. Again she spat, this time directly at him. Again he blocked it with his sword.
Despite the viciousness of your deeds, no mortal under the protection of heaven perished, nor did the pit claim any soul that was not already destined for damnation. To destroy you here would not be in keeping with heaven's mercy.
Get on with it,
Lydia fumed.
You are banished to the pit for the remainder of the century,
Vincent said. As he spoke, he tilted his blade down toward her feet. Flames licked out from the tip, wrapping around one ankle until they formed a ring. The flames around her ankle then spread out in a short, winding line, eventually rolling up into a sphere. Before long, Alex could make out a ball and chain of tight flames.
You will not come to the mortal plane until your sentence has been served.
That's punishment?
Alex asked Lorelei quietly,
sending her home?
With her master dead and his lands in chaos, it will surely not be pleasant,
Lorelei murmured.
I went to great lengths to spend as little time in hell as possible.
Vincent held his blade over Lydia's head. Her body began to glow with white light. She looked to Rachel and then to Lorelai and Alex, staring hatefully before she faded away.
Though I fear, Lorelai added, that one such as Lydia may be ruthless enough to turn all that time to her advantage.
Why didn't you say anything?
Alex asked.
This city is under his jurisdiction, at least as far as the hosts are concerned, Lorelai explained, nodding a bit toward Vincent. He is in no mood to listen to anything we have to say.
As they spoke, they became aware of an awkward hush in the cathedral. Vincent paused after the last light of Lydia's banishment faded, gazing around the chamber. Alex thought he looked like someone who expected applause and heard only crickets.
He's Rachel's ex, by the way,
he said, while Vincent returned to his spot by the altar.
Yes, Lorelai nodded. I can tell, poor girl.
Can we get on with the rest of this?
Vincent asked irritably.
We all have much to do. The balance between heaven and hell has not been so tenuous in an age. All of the chaos sown by Rachel and these others has resulted in untold turmoil among our foe to an end that we cannot predict.
You know, dude, Alex dared to speak up. If you've got a problem with the mess we made, you could always go to hell and do something about it yourself.
Scattered, choking laughter followed. Vincent's face reddened once more. Rachel turned to look at Alex, grinning in spite of her apprehension.
I love you, she admitted.
Then you do not contest or deny the nature of your feelings for your mortal charge?
Lawrence asked her. Rachel looked back at him and shook her head.
Hell no, sir. I'm in love with him.
And of Lorelai?
She opened her mouth to answer, then paused. She looked back to Lorelai.
Her too.
Lorelai's expression softened. Her hand squeezed Alex's. Rachel turned back to face the council above her and shrugged.
That's all,
she said. There was another round of glances and nods at the altar.
Alexander has significant awareness of and connection to the supernatural. The protection of the hosts is no longer warranted,
Lawrence said.
He has the succubus, Lorelai. He has wit and courage, which have repeatedly withstood the forces of the pit. Our numbers are stretched too thinly to spare protection for those who have such resources. Alex will no longer walk under the watchful eye of a formal and dedicated guardian angel.
Rachel's eyes fell shut. She stood very still. When she looked up again, she pointedly gazed at the altar, ignoring Vincent's inevitably smug expression.
Though each guardian angel inevitably comes to love her charge, that love must never become romantic,
Lawrence went on.
Further, it must never be pursued as such. The nature of heaven is kept a mystery to mortal man and woman, for a great many reasons. A guardian angel is a companion, but a silent and unknown one. A guardian angel's heart is full of love, but it is as the love of a protector and guide, not a husband or wife. The revelation of Rachel's existence to Alexander was beyond her control. To have direct and open contact with him after that revelation was understandable and even wise. Yet to take up such a relationship, as the two now share, crosses the necessary distance between protector and protected, as well as that between heaven and earth.
He looked to Rachel gravely.
Rachel, as a result of your actions, you are removed from the ranks of the guardian angels.
She looked down at the floor at her feet. Alex wanted to shout out in protest, to call them all out for being just plain shitty, but Lorelai's grasp on his hand kept him quiet. Rachel's head hung low. The cathedral fell silent enough to hear the angel sniffle. Rachel raised her head again. Her voice cracked as she said, "How else may I serve?"
"We will come to that, with this matter closed,"
Lawrence continued.
"There is another that must be resolved. Vincent, hand over your sword." "What?"
Vincent blinked. Lawrence turned to face him.
"Hand over your sword, Vincent,"
he repeated.
"I don't understand."
"You do," said Hannah. "Under your dominion, this city has become a cesspool of supernatural and infernal evil. In over a century as its guardian, you have utterly failed to check the growth of all manner of darkness in Seattle and its environs. That such a situation could develop without any of the rest of us realizing it is an embarrassment to us all. The actions of these three and their mortal friends testify not only to their courage, but to your ineffectiveness."
"It is no longer appropriate that you hold dominion over this city,"
Lawrence said, with slightly less emotion.
"Hand over your sword."
The muscular angel glared at Lawrence and Hannah in disbelief. At length, he did as he was instructed. The sword appeared again in Vincent's hand, bright with flame and the glowing orb of its pommel. He turned the blade parallel to the floor as he held it out to Lawrence. The dark-skinned angel did not actually take the blade from Vincent. Instead, he held one palm over the pommel until it became free and floated up into Lawrence's hand. The blade diminished, burning neither as brightly nor as large. Lawrence stepped back.
"Rachel,"
Lawrence said,
"please come forward."
With her tears under control once more, Rachel walked up the steps to stand before Lawrence at the altar. The other angel seemed to focus not on her, but rather on the glowing orb in his hand. Rachel knew that the orb would likely have to be brought to Vincent's replacement. At this point, she was fit for a little more than courier duty anyway. She risked a glance at her lovers by the aisle. She saw only support and warmth. Whatever happened to her, she still had them. It would be enough, Rachel decided. It would be more than enough. "Hold out your sword, Rachel," Hannah instructed. Rachel froze. Her eyes widened in disbelief. "You are fucking shitting me," Rachel blurted out before the altar in front of the assemblage of her angelic peers. Lawrence allowed her a small, faint smile.
"No shit," he told her. "Hold out your sword."
She reached out her hand. Long tongues of flame floated up from it, coalescing into a burning blade that she held parallel to the floor. Lawrence held the bright orb to the blade's pommel. When he pulled his hand away, the orb remained.
"Though a mortal typically knows nothing of his or her guardian angel, the deeds of the charge reflect as greatly upon a guardian as do the angel's own actions,"
Lawrence began for all to hear.
"The work of a guardian angel is much like that of a parent. It takes more strength to let the child stand, stumble, fall, and recover on his own than it takes to hold that child's hand and guide him through every moment. We often credit the child's independence to the parent's wisdom. Rachel served as a guardian angel for a single week. We all know what has transpired as a direct result. Yet perhaps most important of all of the accomplishments of Rachel and her charge is not the destruction of evil, nor even the freeing of mortal souls from hell's grasp, but rather the presence here and now of Lorelei. One of hell's demons braves the painful light of heaven simply to offer support and comfort to one she loves. Again, Rachel's decision to pursue a romantic relationship with a mortal violates much of the mandate with which we are entrusted,"
Lawrence said.
"There can be no doubt of that. Yet even in heaven, it is difficult to argue with success."
"Rachel," Hannah said in a loud and clear voice,
You are hereby entrusted with dominion over Seattle and its environs. This shall be your first and foremost duty in all things. It falls to you to battle and banish the darkness of this land. As a guardian angel protects and guides individual mortal souls, so shall you protect and guide all those under the light of heaven throughout your dominion. The cathedral erupted in cheers and applause. Rachel beamed, tears streaming freely down her face as she looked at the glowing pommel of her sword, and then to Alex, who rushed over to wrap his arms around her. She buried her face in his shoulder, laughing and crying all at once. Lorelai followed slowly, catching the eye of both Hannah and Lawrence as she walked in short, stiff steps. The pair of angels descended from the altar to join her. Lawrence offered his hand.
"It is good to meet you this way,"
he told her.
"I admire you greatly."
"The admiration is mutual." Lorelai smiled coolly, taking the hand offered to her. Lawrence cocked an eyebrow. Lorelai explained, "I never would have credited such ruthlessness to the hosts."
"Ruthlessness?"
Lawrence asked, innocently, amid the tumult.
"Whatever do you mean?"
"An angel can do only so much, without upsetting the balance and renewing open warfare between heaven and hell," Lorelai said. "Yet the actions of certain mortals and demons are often plausibly deniable, aren't they?"
"Rachel's burdens need not be shared by you or by Alex," Hannah said.
Lorelai's smile remained.
"You said that with a straight face," she observed. "We all have our talents," Hannah conceded.
She offered Lorelai her hand. "Their happiness has been a long time in coming, Lorelai, as has yours. I am glad you have one another." Lorelai took Hannah's hand.
"Thank you," she said, politely but sincerely.
Then she stepped closer to Rachel and Alex, still wrapped in a close embrace.
"Alex? Rachel?"
Lorelai asked them.
"At the risk of spoiling the moment, I think it's time I take my leave of this place."
"Not without us, you don't," Rachel smiled, taking her hand. Alex likewise fell into step on Lorelai's other side. None of them hesitated in heading for the exit, despite the crowd around them.
"We need to take you home, and then take you over and over."
"We need to get a home,"
Alex thought aloud. Lorelai squeezed their hands.
"I am home with you."
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Natural Consequences, Book 2 in the Good Intentions series, free. This has been an Audible Studios production of Good Intentions, written by Elliot Kay, performed by Tess Irondale. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2011 by Elliot Kay. Production copyright 2015 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc. And now, a free preview of Natural Consequences, Book 2 in the Good Intentions series.
Prologue. This is the case of the United States of America versus Raven Sebastian Winterholm, a.k.a. Sir Julian Storm, a.k.a. Lord Marcus Etienne Ravenscar. Birth name Marvin Kowalski, the judge added with a cynical frown. His eyes glanced up from the papers in front of him. Are you Marvin Kowalski, or any of these other aliases?
The chamber bore greater resemblance to a bunker than a courtroom. The furnishings and layout were all present. Tables for prosecution and defense, a judge's bench and witness stand, even an American flag in one corner. But the concrete walls had been left unpainted. Heavy steel doors fit for a naval ship lay closed and locked at either end of the room. The digital clock embedded in the wall noted an hour far too late for any ordinary court proceeding. The judge sat in black robes at his bench. The prosecutor and defense attorney both wore suits, as did the man and woman in the gallery.
Three uniformed bailiffs stood at the ready. All attention fell on the deathly pale, young-looking man with black hair, frosty blue eyes, and the bright orange jumpsuit of a prison inmate behind the defense table. Thick chains connected his manacles to a similarly thick bullnose ring embedded in the floor. He could stand and sit, but not much else.
"Fuck you, chum,"
the pale man said. His Cockney accent and defiant tone contrasted sharply with the calm, business-as-usual demeanor of the judge.
"This ain't no real courtroom. Why don't you tell me what the fuck you lot are doing and knock off the fucking charades, eh?"
"Mr. Kowalski,"
murmured the suited attorney to his right, "speaking to the judge like that won't do you any favors."
"Piss off."
The judge was unmoved.
"I am Judge Eduardo Castillo. Mr. Kowalski, you've been charged in an indictment with the murders of Carolyn Morris, Raymond Wong, and Douglas Kramer. You are also charged with 3 counts of kidnapping, 23 counts of aggravated assault, assault on federal agents, resisting arrest, misprision of felonies, and tax evasion."
He lifted his eyes toward the defendant.
"Do you have a copy of the indictment?"
"Fuck yourself with your indictment. Stick it up your crusty arse."
The defendant tugged at his chains, struggling as if he had every reason to believe they might break.
"Let me the fuck out of here. You sacks don't know what you're dealing with."
"It's here, Your Honor," said the attorney beside the prisoner. "Very well. Mr. Kowalski, let me inform you of your constitutional rights. You have the right to remain silent. You don't have to say anything to anyone. Anything you say can and likely will be used against you. Do you understand your right to remain silent?"
"Fuck you, it's what I understand."
The defense attorney leaned in and hissed, "Mr. Kowalski, do you understand that this is quite probably a capital case?"
"I'll piss off, mate. These fuckheads feds just jumped me in the parking lot of a fucking hotel 3 hours ago. Even if this is a real court, all this is bollocks and they know it. So either quit the fucking farce and tell me what's going on, or give me a phone call so I can get a real fucking lawyer."
"Mr. Kowalski, they know what you are."
Taken aback by the warning, the defendant asked,
"What?" "Your fangs are showing," advised the attorney.
Kowalski's eyes widened in fear.
"There's no law against that."
"You're not on trial for that. Read the indictment."
Judge Castillo continued,
"You also have the right to representation by a lawyer with appropriate security clearances. Counselor Lopez, who holds proper clearance, currently assists you. Do you have a different lawyer with top secret clearance you would like to use?"
"Wait, clearance?"
The defendant blinked.
"What the fuck you talking about?"
"Mr. Kowalski, this court operates under top secret federal orders pursuant to national security. You will make no phone calls. You do not get to pick any old attorney off the internet. So again, do you currently have on retainer an attorney with top secret clearance? If not, I will appoint Counselor Lopez to continue to represent you. The court will cover all expenses in such a case."
Wait, this is ridiculous,"
the defendant spat.
"I want a real fucking court with a real fucking lawyer and a real fucking judge. Don't give me this top secret bullshit."
"Very well," Castillo conceded. "I will remand you to the Federal District Court of Los Angeles. Your arraignment will proceed at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, October the 22nd.
Marvin's bluster ground to a halt. So did his phony accent.
"Wait, what?" 10 a.m. Tuesday, Los Angeles,"
Castillo repeated. Marvin blinked nervously.
10 in the morning?
He swallowed, looking to Lopez on his left.
"They can do that to me?"
Lopez gave a bit of a nod.
"The regular courts run on regular schedules. This is the only court in the nation that accommodates supernatural conditions." "None of the other courts fucking know about supernatural conditions."
Again, Lopez nodded.
"It's a problem," he sniffed.
Marvin looked from the judge to the lawyer and back again.
Judge, I think I'll take this court and, this lawyer.
Understood. I hereby appoint Michael Lopez to represent you. Is defense counsel prepared to proceed with the arraignment?
Yes, Your Honor, Lopez answered.
Are you correctly named in the indictment? Would you like me to formally read the indictment into the record?
He took his cues from Lopez's short, quick replies.
How do you plead?
Lopez glanced at Marvin, who looked back at a complete loss for words.
Your Honor, my client pleads not guilty, Lopez announced.
Castillo's attention turned to the prosecution's table.
What is the government's position on detention?
Your Honor, the defendant struggled violently against arrest, assaulting several federal agents,
the prosecutor explained.
His health conditions require the ingestion of warm blood, and he has shown every willingness to commit assault to attain it. He has also demonstrated extraordinary strength, speed, and stealth, and is largely unharmed by most weapons carried by police or the general public. It is the government's position that he is a severe flight risk.
Very well, Counselor Oswalt,
Castillo nodded.
Mr. Kowalski will remain in federal custody until trial.
What?
Marvin burst.
That's it? That's my bail hearing?
Yeah, they always screw my clients on that one.
Lopez glanced at his watch.
Look, you'll get 2 liters of fresh chicken blood every night.
Chicken blood?
Behind him, the suited man rose and turned for the door. He was a trim man in his early 30s, tall and clean-shaven. He held the door for the younger woman who followed him out, while Kowalski unleashed a torrent of worried questions on his attorney.
That one's gonna be a slam dunk,
said Agent Paul Keeley. Agent Amber Maddox was not so comfortable with all this. It showed on her young, pretty face. Her pantsuit did little to show off her athletic figure, but that was how she preferred it in these environments. It was hard enough to be taken seriously when she looked even younger than she really was. Waiters and bartenders routinely double-checked her driver's license. Dressing in anything but the most conservative styles at work typically drew the same reactions. Tonight, at least, she could accessorize with the small gauze pad taped over her temple. Kowalski's arrest had not gone as smoothly as anyone had hoped, but in the end, the Bureau got its man. Kowalski had been her first supernatural encounter. Up until now, she had focused purely on learning the ropes within the task force, building an airtight case and making the arrest. Thoughts of what would come after that had been put on hold, but now those concerns were front and center.
What makes you say that?
She asked.
I mean, Kowalski is obviously not all that bright.
Dumb as a box of rocks,
interrupted Keeley with a wry grin.
If you want to be charitable.
And his defense attorney might not be the most energetic I've seen.
Lopez knows how to pick his battles.
Keeley shrugged.
He's good at his job. Knows a shit case when he sees one. Not all those charges will stick.
Amber paused, wondering if she should say something about being allowed to say her piece. To his credit, Keeley caught on to her understandable frustration immediately. He grunted.
It's late. Go on.
Like you said, not all the charges will stick, Amber said. I mean, he gets a full jury trial, right? You said this is done by the book, secrecy notwithstanding.
Well,
Keeley shrugged.
They're entitled to a jury trial. Doesn't mean it actually happens. Remember what we told you about the loyalty oaths, swearing fealty when they're given the big bite and such? Secrecy is the most important aspect. Every vampire is brought in promising to keep their existence secret, even at the cost of their lives. They enforce that on one another brutally. The second a vampire realizes he's been made, he starts sweating bullets. Having to go through a trial like this is some scary shit for them, because even if they get out, their vampire buddies would be all over them to know if they slipped up even just a bit. And they wouldn't be here if they hadn't already slipped, right? A jury is 12 people who know the truth. That's 12 more screw-ups on the vampire's part. so usually they waive their right and opt for a bench trial. Lopez argues that the trial isn't legit because it violates the defendant's Second Amendment right to a public trial. Oswald says the defendant just waived that right by opting for this court over a regular public courthouse. And Castillo agrees, so that settles it, and then we move to the bench trial. Not for the first time this month. A small part of her kicked herself for waiting until now to ask all this. It wasn't as if Keeley or the other agents on the Kowalski case had held anything back. And if they want a jury?
Then we give it to them, answered Keeley. 12 U.S. citizens, fluent and literate in English, with no previous connections to the case, who all hold top secret security clearance. And yes, he added, Lopez objects to that wrinkle, too, and points out that this creates a jury that is naturally predisposed toward the government. Castillo overrules, and life goes on.
Amber walked beside him, unsure which question to ask next. That had more or less been the story of her life for these last few weeks.
So is that how it always goes?
For the vampires, yeah, pretty much, said Keeley. We've had a couple curveballs, of course. In the beginning, everything seemed so crazy that there'd never be a normal. But you start to see patterns. The werewolves have their own goofy habits. And then there's the other weirdos, he grunted. But we haven't caught enough of those other kinds to establish any baselines.
Amber's next question had been on her mind for some time. Amid all the cloak-and-dagger procedures and the grim confidence of the task force, it had seemed almost naive, but now she had to ask. What are you going to do when one of these cases ends in an acquittal? Keeley came to another door. He paused before he opened it to look over his shoulder at the young agent.
I don't know, he smiled. I'll tell you when it happens. Till then, we keep moving on to the next case. And this one's a bit of a problem.
Amber followed him into a conference room dominated by a long table and a white projection screen opposite the door. The room's four occupants had all gone for loosened ties and rolled-up shirt sleeves. She saw Chinese takeout boxes, bottles of soda, and a good number of manila file folders. One wall of the room was covered with suspect sketches.
You ready for us, Joe?
Keeley asked as they entered.
Arraignment's all pretty much finished anyway.
Standing taller than the rest was a blonde man with football hero shoulders, a square jaw, and something just shy of a flat top. The sight of Keeley and the other man together immediately made Amber think, good cop, tackle cop. She met Agent Hauser briefly when she was first recruited onto the task force. He hadn't said much at that meeting. Now he acknowledged her with much the same grunt as then, but this time he spoke.
Agent Maddox?
He nodded.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations on your first arrest with the task force.
Thank you, sir, Amber mumbled.
Everyone?
Hauser said to the others present.
This is Agent Amber Maddox. Received her high school diploma and her associate's degree at age 17 through Washington's Running Start program. Graduated University of Washington with double honors degrees in chemistry and physics, age 20. Worked for 3 years in the Bureau's Applied Sciences Lab, then went to the Academy in Quantico and served in CID for a year before she signed on with the task force, 3 weeks ago.
Amber glanced around at the others. One woman, two men, plus Hauser and Keeley, all staring at her.
That's a bit more of an introduction than I usually get, she said. 5 minutes from now, she'd come up with something much wittier.
Everyone here has at least 10 years on you, Amber,
Hauser explained.
I don't want anyone wondering why you're here, least of all you. You've kicked a lot of ass to be here.
He paused.
Plus, I needed to see if you'd blush.
Did I?
Nope. Have a seat, everyone.
Amber felt many eyes still upon her as she took up an empty chair.
I only did the honors program in chemistry, she confessed. Physics is hard.
Amber, these are Agents Doug Bridger, Matt Lanier, and Colleen Nguyen.
Hauser began as the lights went down and the projector mounted in the ceiling flickered to life.
They've all been on the task force for several years.
You'll be working with us for the foreseeable future in your hometown of Seattle.
Amber blinked. She knew relocation was a potential factor in this transfer, but thought that train had left the station. I'm not staying with the LA office?
Nope.
Hauser said.
No, that was just your audition. We had to make sure you wouldn't freak out at the first encounter with a supernatural. Some people don't take too well to seeing those kinds of abilities.
He paused, offering up a wry smirk.
Most people don't respond by tackling the perp to the ground.
She felt grateful the lights had gone down. It was a pretty sure bet she'd be blushing by now. She paid attention to the map of the West Coast on the screen and its red, blue, and green circles here and there.
The West Coast is something of a hotbed of organized supernatural activity. We've got large vampire societies in L.A. and San Fran and a couple of distinct werewolf packs spread out across the Southwest. The vampires organize themselves in a somewhat feudal structure. There's no discernible consistency of who claims what titles, but there are chains of allegiance. Many of those chains lead to this woman, Lady Anastasia Ilyana Kanatova of Seattle.
The slide changed, offering up a detailed sketch of a thin woman of regal beauty. She was blonde, with Eastern European features and a haughty, elegant look.
We have no idea of her original name or how old she might be, but she clearly dates back centuries. As far as we can tell, she's the best-connected vampire on the West Coast, with allies across the country. She's in charge of a group of at least 60 other vampires in the Seattle area, which is one of the largest populations we've identified. They all vanished last month. We haven't picked up a trace of them since.
Amber blinked. Hauser shifted to the next slide, which showed multiple views of what must have been a large house, perhaps a mansion, judging by its footprint, that had burned down to the foundation. She had to wonder how long it had been burning before the firefighters in the pictures arrived. Even much of the grass had burned within an acre of the house, maybe more.
We know that in mid-September, Kanatova held some sort of major party at this house in one of Seattle's northern suburbs. We don't know what the hell happened at that party. The fire burned so hot we can't really piece together any physical evidence. Property records are suspiciously sketchy. We've matched several abandoned vehicles nearby to known vampires in the Seattle metro area. We're sure at least some of the vampires survived, but they've gone to ground. Local authorities found one still unidentified woman in the tree line, with her head twisted almost in a full turn, and ashes from two vampires, along with their dresses.
Hauser said, clicking the slideshow along.
But that's pretty much it. No human remains, no shell casings, nothing. We've got wiretaps on vampires from here to New York and Miami, and everything indicates they haven't a clue what happened, but they're extremely concerned. They suspect it was a hit by another supernatural faction, but hits this size don't happen. About a week before this incident, a similar fire destroyed a cemetery chapel in Seattle.
Hauser continued, shifting to a new spread of pictures.
Again, cause undetermined. Someone inside called 911 but left the phone off the hook without giving any info. No human remains were found, nothing but ash.
Hauser leaned forward on the table. His voice held steady, but his frustration couldn't be missed.
Years of investigation. Thousands of hours of surveillance, research, solid cases just waiting for a safe moment to nab the suspects. All gone up in smoke, without an explanation. And now, we have vampires all across the country and probably beyond on a hair trigger to retaliate.
Amber glanced around the table. The expressions worn by her fellow agents confirmed that they all knew the whole story already. The briefing was specifically for her.
So we don't have any leads at all? One.
Hauser grunted. He clicked to the next picture. She saw a typical cell phone self-portrait, bathroom mirror, sink in the foreground, towels on a rack on the wall behind the subject. The guy in the picture might barely be old enough to drink. He was skinny, with short, wet brown hair, a pale, mostly hairless chest, and a towel wrapped around his waist. His thug-life posture looked so comical that he couldn't possibly have taken himself seriously. In one hand, he held his cell phone. In the other, he held what appeared to be a wooden stake and a necklace of fangs. An inset photo beside the youth's face provided a blow-up of the fangs, with markings to denote their likely legitimacy.
His name is Jason Cohen.
Chapter 1. And it's only a Tuesday.
This picture's all over the place,
Alex teased. He held his phone in one hand, both his elbows on the restaurant table.
I mean, you've got fangs in your hand, posing like you're about to bust out some terrible nerdcore rap. But all this lens flare makes it look like you've just joined Starfleet. I don't know if I'm supposed to think you got these fangs from Vampire Klingons or Vampire Tupac, you know?
Oh, like you're the guy to critique anyone's photography, retorted Jason. Baskets of half-finished gyros and Greek fries sat between the pair.
Didn't you burn down a church the last time you busted out your camera?
Alex cringed.
I've taken pictures since then,
he said, his voice dropping. He wore a blue dress shirt and black slacks, having come over for lunch from work.
And it was just a funeral chapel. Anyway, you know we didn't take out all the bad guys that night. Why would you want to ask for more trouble?
Dude, nobody's listening to us. It ain't like any of them are gonna eavesdrop on us at this hour, Jason said, jerking his thumb toward the window. Though Seattle's skies were as overcast and its streets as wet as in any other October, it wasn't exactly dark.
Lorelei said those guys are like supernatural bottom feeders, right? So what's the big deal?
They aren't a big deal to her or to Rachel, Alex corrected,
or to Molly and Onyx, but I...
Yeah, have you called them lately? Interrupted Jason. Alex winced.
No. Why not? They seem awesome. They are,
Can we stay on topic? Look, there are more of those guys out there.
They knew my name and how to find me, so they must know how to use computers. I deleted all my social media shit, but we both know all that stuff stays out there anyway. How hard do you think it'd be for them to figure out who my friends are?
Jason gave a bit of a scowl.
You're that freaked out about it?
We are, yeah. Alex nodded.
Jason, I'd be dead right now if it wasn't for you. Twice, at least. And I don't want to think about what would have happened to Lorelei. She almost pulled out of her thing with the conservatory board today to come talk to you about this. I don't think you know how much you mean to her, man.
Sighing, Jason pulled out his phone. His fingers tapped through his password and called up the webpage out of muscle memory. Jason barely had to look.
I was just fucking around anyway, he muttered. Not like I thought anyone other than you two and the guys would get what's in that picture.
Yeah, that's what I figured at first.
Lorelei convinced me otherwise. She's dealt with these assholes before. She says they're hardcore about their secrecy stuff, and so it stands to reason that they pay people to cruise the internet and check for anything that might be about them, even dorky bathroom cell phone pics.
Jason rolled his eyes.
It's gone, okay, already off my profile pic. I'm deleting it from my pictures, see?
He tilted his phone to show the webpage.
Wasn't even up all that long.
Thank you, Alex said.
Although that brings up the other question, where in the hell did you get those anyway? Those were real fangs?
Yeah, they're real. Jason said. I picked them up just after the fight. They were just sitting there in the pile of ashes.
I guess not all of them crumble up all the way.
We wanted to pick up all the incriminating evidence, right?
So you could post it on your profile page?
Asked Alex.
Hey, it's gone. All right, it's gone.
Thank you. Alex sighed.
And you won't show those to anyone, right?
Jason sighed back, more dramatically than before.
No, he grumbled. Nobody'd know what they really were anyway. Hopefully.
Unless Lorelai knows any demon girls who are single, he added, if that sort of stuff impresses them. I kinda doubt it. What about Brittany and Brittany? How's that going? Well, that wasn't ever gonna work out anyway, Jason said,